Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Dr. Linda A. Hill is the Wallace Brett Dunham Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School. She chairs the Harvard Business School Leadership Initiative, and she headed the team that developed Harvard's required MBA leadership course. She's chaired several Harvard executive education courses, including the High Potentials Leadership Program. She's co-author with Kent Lineback of the book Being the Boss, The Three Imperatives of Becoming a Great Leader. Welcome to Edgewise, Linda.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Dave.
Well, let's go right to the heart of the matter. What are the three imperatives for becoming a great leader?
The three imperatives come from an understanding first that when you're in a management role, you have responsibilities for being a leader. You need to figure out how to use yourself as an instrument to get things done in the organization. Because leadership is about using yourself to get things done in the organization, the first imperative is you have to manage yourself. Because to be an effective leader, you have to be able to match your intent with your impact. The second imperative is managing your network. Many people would probably think that the second should be managing your team, because when we think about being a manager, we really think about the people over whom we have formal authority. But in today's organization, unless you can manage relationships with those people over whom you do not have formal authority, your peers and your bosses, making sure that other people in the organization have the right expectations for your team, and you also have the resources they need, there is no way that your team or those people who do report to you can be successful. And then the third imperative is managing your team, the group that you do have formal authority over, building an effective team that can be productive not only today, but for the future.
Now, let's start with the first one, and that's managing yourself.
When I talk to managers, I ask them, what does it mean to be a manager? And they say to me almost immediately, well, you shouldn't think about it in terms of being the boss, because it turns out that formal authority is a very limited source of power, unless you're a really, really big boss. So you have to come up with other sources of power you can rely on to influence people. I think what you mostly want to think about, even if you are the boss and have this formal authority, is how do I build credibility with people? Because even though you may have been highly credible before in whatever role you had, when you move into a managerial role, or if you've been at it for a while and you get more scope and scale, people want to ask again, well, does she know how to do this job? She may have known how to do the last managerial role, but not this one. So what you always need to do is figure out, how do I build credibility with the people I have to influence? And there are three sources to that that you want to pay attention to. One is people want to understand whether you want to do the right thing. So you have to help people understand that you want to do the right thing. Second, people are assessing whether you know what the right thing to do is. Are you competent? And frankly, almost by definition, when you're new to any role, even a very senior managerial role, people don't know yet that you really are competent in that new role. So they trust your character until they know you know what you're doing, that you're competent, that you know what the right thing to do is. You don't yet have credibility with them that will allow you to truly influence them the way you need to get the work done. And the third is, instead of thinking of being the boss as being about rights and privileges, think about duties and obligations. Think about all those people you're dependent on to get your job done that you have to persuade without relying on your formal authority to try to move them in the direction you need to move them. Because for sure, if they're talented, they will not use their judgment if you're using fear and coercion. It just doesn't work that way.
That's an interesting point. But how can the first-time supervisor or first-time manager build credibility for that new role?
For those who are new, who now are managing peers, there's nothing more complicated. Because in fact, they're not going to invite you out in quite the same way. They're not going to share information with you the same way. And it's a very, very lonely feeling. So even though formal authority doesn't count as a way to influence people very much, unless you're a really big boss, it does fundamentally change the nature of your relationship with people. And people are watching you. They are looking for signals about whether or not you are credible. It is only logical that they don't yet know and trust that you are good at what you're going to do and that you want to do the right thing. The other thing I should say about building credibility is what you don't want to do is start telling people what you know. You need to realize that your expertise is one source of power that you have to influence people, and you want people to listen to you because you know what you're talking about. But that was expertise about being the producer or the individual contributor, not about being a manager. Now you have this other role which is working with other people, both the team that reports to you and that network of relationships, getting your team the right resources it needs to do the job, showing that you have some of that kind of influence, you understand the issues is one of the ways you build credibility pretty quickly. But one of the things you can see with new managers is they act like they're even more confident than they should be. And if you start talking about things that you don't actually know, that does not help you build credibility. An experienced manager might be willing to say, I don't know that, which will still allow you to be credible because people are happy to see that you acknowledge what you know and you don't know. New managers have a lot of trouble saying they don't know something or I need some assistance with something. So being authentic and as transparent as you possibly can with the people you're working with will help you develop that credibility faster. People appreciate that you acknowledge what you're good at and what you're not so good at. And the other thing I would say to new managers in particular about managing yourself is recognize that just when you know you don't know what you're talking about, because it is new to you, you're going to be least likely to ask for help because you don't want people to think you're a promotion mistake. I've had a person who was about to become a CEO, even, who called me and asked me some questions about some things that they didn't know how to handle. And I said, well, some of these questions seem to be very specific to your organization. Shouldn't you call someone in the organization and find out the answers to these things? And he said to me, I dare not. This is a person who's about to be the CEO of a company. But it was an example, again, of how nervous we can be right when we're about to get new responsibilities.
All right. Now, let's take a look at another factor.
Yes, for sure. You may have been selected, or probably were selected, to become the manager of the group because you were really good as a star producer or a star individual contributor. And there's actually research that shows that people who are stars have more trouble learning to lead for a couple reasons. One is they're really good at what they did. Consequently, they don't need other people to get it done for some time. They can do the work of five people. So it takes them a little longer to need to delegate. So if you are really good and that's why you were promoted, you now have to unlearn doing what you're really good at and create the space for other people. You're going to work with them to get the job done.
And I think another thing is that they might need to learn how to delegate.
People often think that new managers are poor at delegating because they're control freaks. I think it's more because they don't know who to trust, that someone is ready to do this job. They don't know how to make those judgment calls yet about who's trustworthy and who's not. And so until you actually develop some judgment to know what to pay attention to, or you know how to delegate properly, you're less likely to do it. And because new managers are good at what they do, they can do the work of a lot of people, so they don't need to delegate. We usually learn how to delegate out of necessity. It's when you can't get your arms around it anymore, you finally let somebody else in.
Okay, I have a question about new managers. Can they be a friend to their employees?
If you've been promoted and you're now managing friends, people who you were peers with, that is one of the hardest changes to manage. And that's not only because of you, it's also because of your friends. Your friends are also trying to figure out how to interact with you in this new context. You certainly can be friendly, and people want to have caring relationships with their bosses. You now can affect their lives and their livelihoods. You're the one deciding whether their promotions, their money, whatever it might be. And there's something that we refer to as the burdens of leadership, having all that responsibility. So people can be naturally somewhat skeptical. There'll be a skepticism about what your motives are when you become their boss and you're no longer just the friend. And you need to make sure that you don't cross that fine line with them because there will be information you may not be allowed to share. You may have to make some tough decisions about their performance or their careers, and you have to do what's in the interest of the whole organization. And of course, the other thing is you want to be very careful not to play favorites. So even though being friendly is something that we all like to do, you might find yourself being biased positively towards someone in a way that isn't fair to the whole group.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the second imperative, which is managing your network.
Organizations are inherently political entities, and you must understand that politics is a way of life in organizations. Yes, power does corrupt, but powerlessness really corrupts. Now, I hear from many people, I'm just going to do my job, be a manager, have a wonderful team, and I'm not going to play politics. Well, if you don't play politics, your team cannot be effective. But playing politics means being very focused on what you know is right and important for the organization. A lot of times, people report engaging in unethical behavior or behavior that's not consistent with their values because they didn't know how to exercise influence properly. You have to think about who are the people who you're highly dependent on to get your job done and your team's job done, and who's dependent on you, because we want to create mutual relationships where there's give and take between you and the other people in the organization or outside the organization that you're dependent on to get the job done. And you need to be strategic about that in the best sense of the word. Be empathic, figure out what they need, and help deliver that to them as well as helping them understand what you need, which means not having a hidden agenda. Too many times we have hidden agendas. You need to know what your own agenda is. A lot of managers don't know what their agenda is, what their priorities are. Therefore, they can't communicate those properly so that the other side can see how they can be helpful. So organizing that influence, having that influence is about having a big picture sense of who's going to be impacted by what you're doing, who you're dependent on, and thinking about what their needs and wants and priorities are and what yours are and how you can match those to be mutual.
In your book, you talk about engaging the organization. Can you explain this concept to us?
Too often, managers, junior or otherwise, spend too much time looking down and managing their team and not looking up and across and thinking about that broader context. And of course, we're all people and we're all trying to do the right things. But going back to organizations being political entities, there are three sources of conflict in organizations, primary sources. One is diversity, the second is interdependence, and the final one is competition for scarce resources. In any organization you look at today, there's more diversity on any number of dimensions. Demographic diversity, diversity of products, services, markets served. So by definition, you all have different interests because you're coming from different points of view and you have different issues you're trying to deal with. Secondly, there's a lot of interdependence because to service customers and clients today, organizations need to work in a more seamless fashion. It used to be that you could have these very siloed functions or geographies, but not now because of a lot of pressures. We all have to work together to deliver. And the final one is competition for scarce resources. Need I say more? We all know competition is just going up. When you're a manager, you're the boss, you need to have that big picture in mind. Understand that other people aren't evil. They're all trying to do the right thing too. I think it's best to assume that until you learn otherwise. And then you got to figure out, where do our interests match? How do we do this together so we do what's best for the enterprise and for our stakeholders? That is a process that takes a lot of time.
It's interesting that you're talking about looking up. To what extent is your relationship with your boss important to this management of a network?
Your boss is a judge, but your boss is also a potential coach for you. Now, there are bad bosses out there, but you need to understand that everyone in the organization can be a resource to you to help you learn and develop and has a point of view and perspective. And if you don't role model using your boss to help you be successful, then you can be assured that the people working for you aren't going to see that they can treat you that way. And many people are in matrix organizations. Often we'll pay attention to the boss who's closest to us physically or whatever, and not the one who might be in the other part of the country or another area, but you need to figure out how to manage those relationships with those multiple bosses.
Now let's look at the third imperative, and that has to do with team management. How can you be clear about the way your team works?
To be clear about the way your team works goes back to making sure you have an agenda about what your priorities are. And that should not be hidden. You should share that with the people on your team and otherwise that are dependent upon you. And you need to help people figure out how they can contribute, what their role is. When we talk about clarity, it doesn't mean that there's not overlapping a bit, but people want to understand how they're expected to contribute. So when you're working on your team, what you just need to figure out is who's going to do what and what are we responsible for individually and collectively. And delegate those responsibilities in a way that you can get things done in an efficient and effective way. I want to emphasize that your team might actually help you discover how you all should work effectively. But you want to pay attention to at least three things. One is, how well is the team performing right now and all the various performance metrics that your organization might have for your team. The second is, are the team members satisfied and are they growing and developing? And the third is the group growing and developing and learning together? So you want to make sure you're not only paying attention to current performance, but also future performance and how individuals are actually feeling on the team, because these factors all relate to whether people are engaged and able to contribute in the way we need people to contribute nowadays.
Well, of course, a major factor here is the effect that a team can have on a company's future. So should you be focusing more on the opportunities or the problems?
There are two kinds of gaps you can think about closing. One is a gap between what you're currently doing and what you should be doing. And the other is the gap between what you're currently doing and what you could be doing. The latter is the opportunity. What's the future? How do we prepare ourselves to take advantage of that next opportunity or deal with something that's going to become a threat or a problem for us if we don't start dealing with it now? How do we anticipate? Too often, particularly when we're really busy, as we all are, and there's a lot of strain and not that much resource, we're very focused on closing what one of my colleagues, Michael Tushman, refers to as performance gaps. It's a gap between what we're doing now and what we should be doing. And we're not looking at that longer term opportunity about the future. And what we all know is that opportunity gaps eventually become performance gaps because we don't anticipate, we're too reactive. So no matter where you are in the organization, even if you're very junior, the organization needs you to be looking to the future, and you're not supposed to simply wait for it to come down from on high. Effective organizations just don't work that way. I don't know that they ever did, but they certainly don't nowadays, given how dynamic the world is.
So what should managers do?
Management, in part, is about managing complexity or coping with the complexity that exists out there in our organizations today, having three bosses because you're serving so many markets, so many products are virtual. And that's often referred to as a management responsibilities. The other piece is managing for change or coping with change. We have continuous change and we have more and more complexity. As a boss, you are responsible to deal with both of those challenges. And dealing with it doesn't mean simply you dealing with it. It means building a team that knows how to deal with it. So don't take it all on yourself and build relationships with your peers and bosses so they're also helping you in that task so you can meet the needs of the enterprise.
Right. Now, do you have any concluding thoughts you want to leave our audience with?
I guess what I would say is I have a tremendous amount of respect for those people out there who are the bosses. It's an extremely important role because what you do and the kind of impact you have on creating the culture in your team and building the right kinds of relationships with your colleagues truly does make a difference. And being mediocre or good is not enough. You need to be great. We wrote the book to be a tool based on what we've learned about what helps people on a daily basis move from being good to great in a very, hopefully, practical way. It's a very hard job. It's not in your imagination. Promotions are often much more painful than people realize because of the amount of learning that needs to be done, and it's all self-learning. It's a process of self-development.
We've been speaking to Dr. Linda A. Hill. She's co-author of the book, Being the Boss, The Three Imperatives of Becoming a Great Leader. Linda, thanks for being with us on Edgewise today.
My pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
The American Management Association has an international presence, adding value to your organization by involving you in a global community of peers and practitioners via one of the world's most sophisticated knowledge exchange networks. Today, AMA's global reach extends from Management Center Europe in Brussels to Management Center de Mexico in Mexico City, from the Canadian Management Center in Toronto to AMA Japan in Tokyo. And since 1995, AMA has served the Chinese market through the Asia-Pacific Management Institute in Shanghai. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.